It is Saturday, February 7th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news, a discussion about internet video communications, and your calls and questions about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on Geek Speak, I'm happy to have a guest on from Logitech. Nick Kuniff is going to be here to talk about webcams and how they work, the services you can use with them, and of course, the line that Logitech actually offers of webcams. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to GeekSpeak right now and participate in our forums or send us email, and I'll give out all that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Geek's Al Lacow. He's a new media architect. Morning.
Good morning.
Miles Elam, student programmer and political junkie.
Good morning.
And Nick Kuniff, product manager at Logitech. Hi, Nick.
Why, hello.
We'll introduce you more officially when we start talking about Logitech products and webcam development, all that stuff. But first, we're going to do the Geek News. And Al, I'd like to start with you.
All right. Well, as if Google doesn't know enough about you, there's now a new feature called Google Latitude, and it's a service that essentially tracks your close friends through GPS on your phone that, you know, opt in, of course. Here it is, you know. I mean, now Google's giving away another thing for free that you're able to keep track of everybody, you know, essentially. So you see a map, you pull up a map, and you'll see little faces of your friends scattered all over, uh-huh, you know, where they are, and you can kind of keep track. And their example that they give is, you know, a girlfriend could use it to see if her boyfriend has arrived at a restaurant, and if not, how far away he is.
I like how you put the spooky voice feeling on it.
I guess you could use it for that.
Okay, but first off, Google doesn't make very much hardware. They do have the Android platform, but how is the GPS information coming in?
It's coming off regular. I mean, what they say is that it'll work on most color screen BlackBerry phones, most phones with Windows Mobile 5.0 or later, and most Symbian-based devices such as Nokia smartphones. And an update to the Google Android operating system now being distributed to T-Mobile.
We'll also have that.
You know, it doesn't work on the iPhone and iPod Touch, but, you know, I tried it, and it says, coming very soon.
Right.
You know, so it's very soon.
There's a whole bunch of devices that have GPS or even cell phone triangulation. So if they can put a little piece of software on the phone, it basically pings Google every once in a while saying, this is my location, and then Google maps it. It's mm-hmm. The ability to do this has been around for quite a while, but the saturation level is kind of higher now.
Now it's like, so, just your phone. I mean, it is a free, you know, Google's free kind of whole, you know, offerings. They, you know, basically everything they give you, just use. And, you know, it's really not free. They're you know, they know things now about you.
Yeah.
So that's the question,
is it okay to give a corporation all this information? Now, first off, the service is very cool because, you know, I don't normally go downtown a lot, Santa Cruz, right? I mean, do every once in a while, right? Mm-hmm. But when I do, it would be nice to know if, you know, you are over at Logos or something, right? And I can go and visit you. So seeing your friends in the network kind of makes sense.
Or to see if your girlfriend has arrived at a restaurant. And how far away she is.
It is a little creepy. And, of course, the system knows it before the people know it. I mean, the system has to know it.
Right.
And then, of course, you have this thing. Google makes all their money off of ad placement. So if they know you've been in this town and they know that you go to this store, which they will, they can market to you better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, that's I think it's a neat thing, though. I mean,
I agree.
You know, being a little bit, subversive, but it is a neat thing. And I would probably use it.
Last week, and since you mentioned Google, I'll mention another story. Last week, we talked, I think, briefly about how Google kind of had some service outage for a little bit of period of time. What actually happened is when you do a search result on Google that pulls up malware software, sites that are unsafe for computing, that determination is a little difficult to determine. But there'll be a little tag at the bottom that says, be careful of this site. And if you click on the link, you'll go to a warning page saying, this page that you're about to visit is known to contain malware and bad things and do this at your own risk. It's a service kind of that Google offers, and they actually offer it by this company called StopBadware.org, and it's a nonprofit organization which basically indexes sites that are bad. They look for things that are bad, and then they add this to this giant list, and Google uses the service to determine whether this they'll show that link. And last week, Google, somebody at the company actually put backslash as a bad site, which means every site, it matched every site in the world. So for about 24 hours, Google's search results, or maybe, no, it was an hour, excuse me, Google search results said, don't go here, and gave a warning, even when you searched Google, like any website that they could possibly give up. And that's a, you know, that's what we talked about last week, a little bit why it happened, which is kind of cool. I like that it's a nonprofit that actually determines these things, because the idea of a corporation saying this site is bad is scary. I'm a little more kin to a nonprofit doing it, because at least they have a mission statement that's more altruistic. But in any case, the question arises from this, what happens if Google goes down, and how much does it affect the economy? We have It's the leading advertiser online, so there's a lot of revenue in that sense. And so there's a kind of a big question of, you start focusing so much stuff through Google, and it's one point of failure. Now, this is a rare case and all that, but it is the point of failure, and it's not what I think of as the cloud concept very well. You know?
It'd be an interesting thought to think, well, what would 1 minute of no Google cost the world? Or, you know, what would be lost if Google was off air for just 1 minute? It would be an interesting calculation.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's a large number.
A big number out there. If anybody knows that number.
Let's get some analysts on that right away. Right. And of course, there's other search engines, but it's more about, Google has all these web applications that allow you to open Word documents, for example. So all those go away for a period of time if Google goes down. Anyway, and I think it's pretty robust, and it's probably the safest site, you know, the most stable site out there.
But, right.
All right. Let's go on to the next story. Miles, hi.
Hi.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well because science has brought something back to life. Well, shortly. The Pyrenean ibex, it's a wild mountain goat, went extinct in 2000. What they thought was the last surviving specimen or surviving individual died, you know, in the mountains. And so the only choice to bring this back was another creature that went extinct because we were encroaching on their territory.
Right, so it's our responsibility kind of thing.
Primary reason why animals go extinct.
Now, can I just say one thing right there? The human species and the human ancestry has made lots of creatures go extinct. This is not a new thing. This is a part of nature. Things become dominant in that area, and they make things extinct.
Right, even before we showed up, 99.9% of all creatures that have ever lived on the planet are extinct.
Okay.
However, the rate of extinction is increasing dramatically in the last few hundred years.
So, okay. Oh, that's a good point.
Now, this ibex, this goat, has been cloned. And unfortunately, it had some lung problems, just like the early iterations for Dolly, the cloned sheep, had lung problems. Apparently, it's a common problem with that. But the kid that was born was in fact exactly the same as the last ibex who they took tissue samples from after it died.
So what you're saying is they were able to, and that as that creature lived, that was a species on the planet of that creature. So we have brought back a large mammal.
Is that from extinction? Is that from like some tissue they saved?
Yes.
Or
that
was so we can't like bring back the dodo bird or anything? Because
presumably
not the same way.
Not unless somebody froze found one. Some.
A piece of a dodo bird.
Amazingly preserved.
Okay, but still, that means we've successfully reversed an extinction of a species. Now, it's not successful in the sense that it's not maintaining. It's not going to have kids.
Right. Well,
I love that we're talking about goats. We can use kids appropriately. It's wonderful.
No, there is an issue where
we're not really cloning kids, by the way.
Where you clone an individual, and let's say you clone two of them, and let's say that one of them ended up being male, one of them ended up being female.
And then they may reach maturity.
After they reach maturity.
And then you play some good music for
but
them.
But there you end up with a whole issue of you have, it's worse than siblings. You have the exact same creature mating with itself.
Right, so you need actually multiple samples.
So the gene pool would get a bit sketchy, is to put it mildly.
Yeah, but over a period of time, if you could keep having them breed, over a period of time you would get enough diversity, biodiversity in the species for it to work.
Assuming
and some species
survive.
Actually have a lot of similarities. In any case, I see there's a lot more work to be done. And for example, this creature didn't live because the lungs didn't form very well.
Right, but there's always been this issue with ethical cloning. is it, you brought it up earlier, yeah. Is it our responsibility if we led to the extinction of a species to
like
try to bring it back?
Like the dodo bird, for example, another one we terminated. Well, I don't know. And then you wonder where, how far back do you go? And I think the answer will be that as an inquisitive species, us humans, we'll probably try to bring back anything that we could. You know, if we do find some sample of a frozen creature that is extinct, we'll probably try to bring it back. Out of curiosity, this creature, he says, has lung problems. It's a very common problem when you have a creature that doesn't spend enough time in the womb. So is this a situation where they actually put it, they grew this baby, if you will, in another goat? Or did they try to do it?
It was in vitro fertilization. Okay. It's a nuclear transfer. Right. So you take an egg from an existing goat, like a standard goat, a standard mountain goat, and then you inject it with the genetic material from the cell.
So that means actually it's not a pure species then, because some of the information in the cell is actually coming from the other goat species. The genetic straits, still...
All the genetic information is, in fact, from that ibex.
That's right. But the base cell that actually splits continually, that information wasn't generated from the genetics of the primary, of the new genetic. Well, you know what?
No, the
this
cell,
is not
the
a bio show, so we'll go
no,
on.
No, the cell wall is...
And that persists. That information persists with the species. You can modify the cell information without genetic modification and still have a different type of person or a different type of creature, if you will. But you know what? We're not a bioengineering show, so we should talk to Don about this or have somebody on. Anyway, very cool. Brought back a species. Not bad at all. So that's your kid story. Al, you got a kid story too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's finally happened. A 9-year-old has written an iPhone application. We knew it was coming. Apple makes things easy and simple. And, you know, I've had these ideas myself, and now a 9-year-old has done it. So it's a little boy named Lim Ding Wen from Singapore, and he developed an app called Doodle Kids, and he designed it with the inspiration of his younger artistic sister. And this thing just basically has shapes, random colors, and you can move them around with your finger. You can shake your phone, and it'll mix up all the shapes. And it just, you know, it's just a fun thing for kids. I mean, it really doesn't take much for a kid to be entertained by things like this. You know, kid's 9. I mean, when I was 9, I think I used to like drawing monsters.
Yeah. I was really into race cars.
I don't know what is going on nowadays, but it seems like these kids are geniuses. I don't know.
This story from Gizmodo that you linked to talks about an 8-year-old Microsoft certified professional.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that either.
That is another very bizarre thing.
Okay, my son is 7.
Is that
7,
because the kids are really smart, or is that because the certification doesn't require as much?
That's kind of the funny thing about that, isn't it?
It makes you wonder. Yeah.
So, Miles, you're developing an iPhone app, right?
I have developed iPhone apps, just none that are useful.
And at the spry age of 34, I'm impressed.
Hey, I didn't have an iPhone when I was 9. If I was 9, maybe, you know.
Yeah, you were hacking stuff. And
how old's your kid?
7.
Yeah, he needs to get on that.
I think that maybe it's time for you to start teaching Wyatt how to program iPhone applications. Because if we can beat him, which is possible,
then we'll be
that'd
in the
be
news.
Awesome. That's right. Got to do that. Besides, it'd be cool.
And then he'll be in the limelight, and he'll run into all sorts of emotional problems later on.
I'm really curious if this kid did it all by himself, or if he kind of designed
the
game. Well,
it says that he's fluent in 6 programming languages, and he's been using the computer since the age of 2. So, I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know how that works.
Let's train out Wyatt and then Alexander. We'll train out Alexander. Now Alexander will beat Wyatt, and we'll just keep it.
Yeah,
now.
I mean,
what is their threshold for he was using the computer since the age of 2? Because Wyatt was using the computer at the age of 9 months. He wasn't necessarily using it effectively, and he was banging on the keyboard.
Yeah, was he using it for?
Specifically,
that's
he was
the
using
trick.
It to hold water. I
yeah.
Think as I recall, my keyboard went out. All right, let's go on. We had a caller. Excuse me, a listener emailed us a week ago or so. Gabe emailed us with, hey guys, I don't know that this would be geeky enough, but it is. He's a total geek, listens to the show all the time. He's actually a real estate person. And what he does on the side is does a site called 1-800-Shortcuts.net. And what 1-800-Shortcuts.net is a free service. You put in a company name, and it comes back with how you get a person on the phone. So you put in AT&T, and it comes out with a whole bunch of lists for AT&T, actually, and depending on what you want to do. It shows the 800 number, and then it shows the key sequence to get to a human being.
Oh, man, I would love that.
Isn't that great?
Oh, just to be able to get past that voicemail system.
I know. So he's got tons of sites in there, and he's doing it himself with email feedback from people.
Wow, that's a great idea.
It's a great idea. And now the only thing I want to do with him is I want to go, okay, first off, you've got to figure out a way to make it social and somehow trust people. Because anytime you're on a phone and the system doesn't work, you should be able to update it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I emailed back and forth. forth with him about that. But if anyone wants to work on this project with him, I think it would be wonderful to get the system fully functional. And I'd like it on my iPhone, please.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, you could just have it a button away while you're making phone calls.
You know what my trick is for that? Mm. If you call some number and it's one of those voice recognition systems and it says, "Hello, we're happy to get your call. What? Please state your name, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, would you like to talk to, do you have a technical question? Say yes or no." Then you just go, "I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Please say that again." And then they'll say, "Please hold on, we'll give you a live representative."
Yeah.
And that's how I always get
through
that stuff.
It's the ones that, you know, press zero for this, press that.
Yeah.
So here's like AAA Financial, right? So they get the 800 number. You press zero at each prompt, ignore all responses. Just keep pushing zero until you get a human. What's the other one?
Personally, wow. I always loved whenever I called in and I got that prompt and I would say something like, blah, blah, or something just, "Come on, I want to talk to someone. Did you want support?" "No." "Did you want to make a payment on your bill?"
Oh, because you think it actually goes somewhere eventually?
Well, no, it actually, it looks to see something that matches and says, "Well, it didn't really get it close, but this one seems like it matched the closest, right. So I'm going to choose this
one." Yeah, that's just true, because that's what they're actually doing. They've got a short library list that they're trying to get to. But so here's Aetna. I don't know what Aetna is. Oh, Aetna is an insurance company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Say member, then press zero several times until transferred. So just what a great thing. Like, yeah. You know, it's something everyone's wanted to want to get on phone. So that's 1-800-SHORTCUTS.net. And Gabe, congratulations on doing a very cool site. Keep it going, but please figure out a way for us to help you rather than emailing you, because if it gets too popular, you're just not going to be able to do your day job. And, of course, I guess he's a real estate person, so maybe if you want to buy a house, you should contact him. Okay, let's handle one more news story, because it's just too cool, the tickets thing. It's just – it's too great. Al, you want to take it? Go ahead.
I think that you should talk about this.
Yeah, okay.
I was really into the thought was that, you know, if you have a virus, you know, we talked about the Trojan a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if it's not clever, it's just not a virus. It's just a thing, you know, but
this is clever.
Yeah.
Okay, so what some people did, and, oh gosh, wait, what town was it in? I'll look that up real quick. So in North Dakota, let's see. If you live in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and you get a parking violation, it's possible the parking violation is actually not from parking enforcement, but from a malware distributor. The basic idea is you take a parking ticket and you put it on a whole bunch of people's cars, and the person gets it and they're like, "What? It looks like a parking ticket." You look at it and says, "If you want to dispute this ticket, go to this website." And that website is a malware distribution site. So you go there, and if you're on a Windows machine that's unpatched, you get hit.
Yep.
And of course, if you're kind of trusting it right away because you got it in a physical form, if it says download this application to talk to a person and it's actually an application that's malware, you're hit. So it's a very clever way of not very viral in the sense that it's only in one little town.
It involves the physical world.
Yes.
You know, and by the way, we're bringing this up as a public service, so you understand
careful.
It. We're not giving you ideas. We're just saying, hey, you know, this might be a scam.
The article that we're linking to talks about how it's like, it says, "This appears to be a very limited attack, reported only in Grand Forks, North Dakota, for the time being, but it's a good idea."
Yeah.
And then I'm like, keep your skepticism up is what it's saying. But, you know, we had years ago, I think the first podcast we had on Geek Speak was in 2002, though the show's been going on for longer than that. Let me see if I can find it. It was with Kevin Mitnick. He's a famous hacker. Maybe it's not the first one. Yeah,
he was
the
guy.
First one we have recorded.
First one we have recorded, yeah. So you can listen to it. October 21st, 2002, we had Kevin Mitnick on. He had a book out, The Art of Deception. Kevin Mitnick's the guy that, like, when you talk about hackers who get arrested by the FBI and they're young, that's Kevin Mitnick's
story. Free Kevin.
Yeah.
If you ever saw those bumper stickers that said Free Kevin, that's the Kevin
that
we're talking
about.
So
basically, yeah. he took over the phone system in Vegas by hacking away, and he basically owned the phone system. And then he was searched. He was looked for by the FBI for a long time. But
he just basically was able to get free phone service.
Okay, I'll say pwned then. No, he was the he was the senior admin at the when he was done. He was the senior admin. His user account, whatever, was he controlled it.
Like, okay,
other people would have problems dealing with it, but he would pwned. Is that how you pronounce that? In any case, the reason I bring it up is that Kevin's book, The Art of Deception, which is quite a good book if you want to learn about social engineering, is he one of the stories he tells, which is not necessarily a true story, is that he you could take a CD and put malware on it, and then write on the CD, you know, financial information for employees, and, you know, give T through Z, okay? And then you just go into any corporation and drop it in the elevator. and you leave. And either a person comes up and goes, ooh, what are the salaries that they employ? And they throw it in their business machine at work and then it infects the network. Or they hand it off to someone in HR who goes, this is weird, puts it in the machine and infects the network. So the idea of the physical world easily manipulating the digital one is something that social engineers have been using
forever. You're just not aware. You're not on guard in the physical world.
You're not
on guard when you're checking your email.
Well,
or
we are. The geeks are on guard. I don't know if everyone is.
Yeah.
Don't open attachments. Do backups.
Even if they're attached to your windshield wiper.
Especially, don't open that attachment.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Don't open strange. Don't try to use strange CDs that you found on the floor on an unprotected window system. Yeah.
And actually, the coders are getting another house.
The coders are getting another house?
They're getting out of your house and they're putting the tickets on your car.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air, and we have Miles Elam, we have Al Luckow, and we also have Nick Kuniff. Hi, Nick. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Nick is product marketing manager for the Internet Communications Business Unit at Logitech. He's our guest. After a political science degree from Berkeley, Nick started focusing on user experience software and has been working at Logitech for over 3 years or so. And we're basically talking about video communications. That's what we're talking about, right? This whole new thing of being able to have a camera, a video camera on you all the time when you're at the computer, communicate with other people, post a video, that whole deal requires webcams. So you've got a whole product line of webcams. You brought some in. In fact, we're going to give one away today on GeekSpeak. Tell us a little bit about what you focus on in doing this. What's different about this, for example, this camera, than the ones that are built into Macs?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different things there. I'd actually take a step back and, kind of talk about why video calling is important, why you need a webcam, why you need an extra, accessory. And I think, that's extremely relevant right now in today's society. The economy's bad. People aren't able to travel. Not a whole lot of money to go visit loved ones. Can't take those trips. Phone calls, international or local, can, add up. They can get pretty expensive. But at the end of the day, it's just an audio communication. It's not very emotional. It's not very personal. As times get tough, people want to have that more of the personal connection. They want to see people. I mean, at the end of the day, most people have a computer, probably have internet, and you're paying for a phone bill. Why not do it for free and be able to see and hear the person that you're talking to?
And the premier service right now for that is Skype. It's a free service, assuming you just do computer to computer communication. It does audio and video. It can actually also dial phone numbers for you and call normal phone numbers. I use Skype. We use Skype sometimes on the show when our guest has a Skype connection too, because it's a better quality conversation than a phone call. And actually, we're going to give away one of these webcams that you brought in. Thank you so much for donating some of these to our guests or to our listeners. And the way we're going to do this is, if you're listening near your computer and you've got Skype, go ahead and call me. I've got my Skype account open. My Skype username is Lyle_Troxell. L-Y-L-E _Troxell. T-R-O-X-E-L-L. And right now, please feel free to call me. If you're listening as a podcast, I might not be awake. But right now, I'm connected. So go ahead and give me a ring.
Just sort of a test to see, how pervasive is Skype and that. I mean, people are out there and, you're listening to the radio station. You happen to be in front of a computer. I mean, how common is this?
Right.
So if somebody's able to just call us, during the show, we'll just see. I mean, maybe people are. And the first person to do it gets a webcam.
Wow, that was fast.
What?
We have somebody already.
It wasn't even a minute. So I guess it is kind of popular,
Hey, Paul, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Paul. I don't know if he can hear me right now. Let's see.
Thank you for having me.
There he is.
So yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, no problem. Of course, you're going to have like a 7-second delay. So Paul's on via Skype, and Paul, you got a webcam. It looks like you already have a webcam. What are you using, Paul? He's like 10 seconds delay.
Yeah.
Paul, we can hear you.
Didn't think about that in radio.
Well, he should be able to hear
it
us through Skype.
Lab tech. 10 seconds delay. Yeah.
All right, so Paul, what we're going to do is you we'll send you a where are you calling from? Where are you from, Paul?
Pause.
I think you have to do a text message at the same time.
I am 300 feet from the beach at
300 feet from the beach.
Wi-Fi access.
I'm in Santa Cruz.
Cool. Well, what we'll do is we'll have you come by the studio. Paul, we're going to connect a little bit later because right now on air with the delay, it's causing everybody crazy.
Skype for our callers. viewers and listeners everywhere.
Yeah, really. Paul, we'll talk to you after the show. I'll text message you through Skype. Thanks for calling, man.
It is horrible. I agree. I'll see you guys. Thanks for picking up my call.
All right, so that was an example of Skype and gave away the camera. As you can see, a lot of people have it available because we asked once and actually like five people actually tried to call me. Paul just happened to be the first one. So Skype video conferencing, and actually I could see Paul and he could see me, but his camera was pretty bad quality. I mean, it looked really jaggy. It was full screen almost, but it looked really poor. Is that a camera problem or a connection problem?
It can definitely be a combination of both. Logitech Quick Cams, that's our webcam line. We make sure to use glass elements in most of our webcams, which is going to give you, just as a baseline, you're going to have a better experience. Now, of course, on top of that, your computer's power, your ability to process, and your internet connection is going to impact your experience a little bit. But, you know, most broadband is in most homes nowadays. And with, you know, a 1.3 megapixel or 2 megapixel camera, that's a pretty clear and a very, very good experience.
A couple weeks ago, we were talking about Santa Cruz Geeks, and one of the businesses in Santa Cruz is 12seconds.com. Have you heard about this?
No, I have not.
12 Seconds is kind of like a Twitter with video, or they say that Twitter's like 12 seconds without video. But basically, it allows you to make a real quick recording. And what I found kind of impressive when I was using that, and actually also on Facebook, there's built-in like Flash Player, basically, or the Flash application can actually access your camera. So it's relatively easy to write a little Flash app that will record the conversation and save it to your local machine and then send it off remotely. And it just detects the camera that's connected. So doing this for making quick videos, like on YouTube or something as well, is kind of become extremely easy. You don't even have to have software on your computer except for a browser. That changes things for me as well, in the sense that it always used to be that you had to record something, you got a raw file, then you had to open it up in an editor, slice it together. So that simplicity aspect is really hitting quite a bit now.
What kind of computer, Nick, do you need? I mean, if say I'm just starting out and I want to use a webcam, can I just hook it up to my, you know, I mean, what exactly am I looking at to get a good video experience using a webcam?
I mean, you know, so it all starts with the webcam. Not all webcams are created equally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a VGA lens, which is going to be, a much more affordable, it's going to be a lot cheaper than the other models. It's not going to give you nearly as much, you know, vibrancy, sharpness, and a very good fluid video experience, something that has 2 megapixel. But most of the computers now are at least a 1.6 or 2.4 gigahertz computer.
Except for Miles.
Well, Miles is a separate story.
We'll have to talk about that.
300 megahertz of raw Pentium 2 power. Okay. That's all I got to say.
Smoking. Go on, Nick.
But yeah, and most homes now have broadband.
Right.
And that's...
So you put those two together and you've got a video conferencing system, no problem.
And it's going to be a very, very good experience. You know, I think one of the problems why video calling has not become as prevalent as it was, as it is now, is you go back a few years and you hear video calling. We watch, you know, Total Recall, we see movies.
Right.
We have this expectation that it's going to be full screen, sharp. It's going to be like a TV experience.
Right.
And you go back 5-10 years, you have dial-up modems, you have VGA cameras, you have very slow computers, and it's very choppy and grainy and absolutely not a lifelike experience.
Right. You keep on seeing VGA, and we don't really talk about megapixel VGA. VGA resolution is 640 by 48 pixels. So the newer cameras, like 2 megapixel, how big is that?
That's 1600 by 1200 megapixels.
So, pixels. Yeah. So it's a lot better than video in your TV, for example.
Is that HD? Is that HD size? Or,
I mean, so the common nomenclature for HD, your 720p is 1280 by 720. So this is actually a higher definition than that resolution there.
Hmm.
The key thing to draw a distinction with, though, is that there's the size of your camera and the number of pixels in a given area that it's capturing.
Right.
But when you actually transmit that video over the...
You've got to reduce it.
It's going to be something a little bit different.
But you
So the benefit here is that if your video conference is going to be in a QVGA, which is 320 by 240, it's not small, or VGA, which is, you know, a four times as large, depending on what your sensor is, you're going to have more. If you have a 2 megapixel Logitech webcam, you're going to be able to see that much more detail in that VGA window than if you just had a basic VGA camera, because in that same field, you're going to have a lot more pixels, a lot more definition.
But you're coding it down to something lower resolution, so the capture does it matter really? Or are you talking about zooming into a certain area?
No, the capture absolutely matters.
I'd like to debate that with you, but first I have to do some station business. So let me just let you know that you're listening to KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the room we have Miles Elam. We have Nick Kuniff from Logitech, who we're speaking with, and of course Al Luckow. And we are taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. I'll take Skype calls. I figured out how to do it, so we'll just take a Skype call if you want. But if you want to call to talk to us directly via phone, you're welcome to do that as well. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. That's in the 831 area code. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. If you do want to call me through Skype, my username is Lyle_Troxell. Send me a text message first telling me who you are, and then we'll connect. So the phone numbers again, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. It's a love-hate relationship. Love your cars, hate it when they break. You'll love the car guys and hate to miss them when Click and Clack give their advice on things automotive. Every Saturday right after Geek Speak at 11, and Sunday morning at 9, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. All right, so when you're talking about, first off, this camera, since it's higher resolution, it's actually probably, I mean, it's going to be higher resolution camera than most people's video cameras. So if you've got a video camera that's not an HD video camera, this Logitech camera that's your webcam is actually a better resolution. Does it interface with video software? You can actually capture just video without using it as a web device?
Yes, absolutely. It comes with a proprietary software in the box, and you can record HD videos. You can take interpolated images all the way up to 8 megapixels.
Oh, nice. Which is so the same, you can use it as a still image.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. And this this camera, that's for Mac or Windows solution?
Yes.
You can do the video editings for both? Or I guess on a Mac you'd have iMovie, so you could just use that.
Yes. With our Mac solution, the QuickCam Vision Pro, allow the user to be completely immersed in that Apple experience and use all the tools and applications that they are most comfortable and familiar with.
But on a Windows machine where it's not actually built in, you offer a product free with the camera.
Yes.
And Miles, is it working on Linux?
It actually is working very well on Linux.
And how long did that take you to get set up?
I was going a little slowly. Plugging it in, literally the device driver loaded up. The hardest part that I had was choosing which application I wanted to use as a webcam.
Right.
But in terms of driver support, it's literally...
So if you already had webcam working on Linux, then this would have been really quick because you would have already had the product.
No, if I'd already had the webcam software
installed,
I could have just
used it.
Yeah, right,
have you installed Skype yet on that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You should... Oh, no, that machine's too slow.
Yes, I couldn't use 640 by 480, which was the default for this camera at 30 frames per second. It was just way too much memory usage for.
To be fair, what's the computer specs?
No,
the
it's
an experiment.
It's because I have a 256 megabyte RAM laptop. That's the only reason. That's why I had to punch it down. So if you have a Pentium 2, you may run into some problems. If you have anything above a Pentium 2, 300 megahertz, you're probably going to be golden.
Yeah, so just to put that into context, our good friend is running 300 megahertz of system sources. We suggest at least a 1.0 system for a good experience.
1.0 gigahertz.
Which is extremely available on the market, and that has been available for quite some time.
The Goodwill has a lot of those.
So Nick, when Al invited you to be on GeekSpeak to set the show up, did you know that you're going to be doing Pentium 2 support?
I had no expectation, so I guess...
To put into context here, this laptop, this 300 megahertz laptop, has as much horsepower as my iPhone.
You know, we have talked the last three shows, like we've talked about your Pentium experience, and I would just like to say, if anyone's done listening to Miles' Pentium problems and all that, and us joking
they're
about
not problems.
Whatever.
You're
welcome to give Miles a better computer.
Whatever, I'm hardcore.
He will accept a better
computer. He's into minimal computing.
So if you've got a laptop you want to throw to Miles, let us know on the GeekSpeak website. You can contact us right now via phone, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877.
Patience is a virtue.
Bob from Watsonville, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, sorry. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Hello.
What's your question?
I have I don't know if it's relevant to you guys in this show today, but I have a pair of Logitech speakers that used to work on my laptop, and they don't work anymore.
Are they USB?
Yeah.
So this is USB speakers are a wonderful idea. I really like the idea of them in that you can use the power off. Is it powered by that or is it powered separately?
Okay. Yeah, it's powered by them.
So is it a new computer?
No, it's an HP Pavilion.
Mm-hmm. And are you using the same USB port you were using before?
Yeah.
So you uploaded it to Vista?
No.
No,
I'm on XP.
No changes to your system and major scale just stopped working? All right, they're dead. They're just old.
No, they work on my son's computer.
You know what I find, though? I find that a lot of USB devices, when they get the power through the USB plug itself, won't work on some, especially laptops. They don't put enough power into the USB. There are some little, you know, third-party things you can get.
USB hubs.
You can get a powered USB hub. That would be something to try first, because then you've got, you know, straight power. And then there's other things where you can, there's like a little Y connector that plugs into both USB.
Yeah, but why would they have worked on my computer
before?
And they work on my son still, but they won't when I go back to my computer.
Yeah, I mean, you probably have a driver complication.
Well, it's very hard to say from my vantage point over here in Santa Cruz, but one thing that often happens with myself is that your OS is going to change your sound card, and it might be routing the sound to something else, and that's why the speaker's not picking up.
Have you done the standard thing of like plugging them in, then rebooting your machine, letting it come up?
Yeah.
And then the next thing is go to Device Manager. Do you know what Device Manager is in XP?
You know, I haven't.
Okay, so if on your desktop, if you have a My Computer, you right click on that and you go to Properties. Under that, there's a whole bunch of tabs. One of them's Device, or one of them's Advanced, I think. No, it's right there. And then there's a button called, I don't have a Windows machine in front of me. Device Manager. Go in Device Manager, and any of the drivers that aren't actually working on your computer are going to have like a little explanation point that's yellow, or like a big red X kind of, you know, skull and crossbone kind of thing. And that basically means that driver's no longer functioning. And that should actually, it should auto-load when you plug the USB port. But if it's not, that might be the problem. Then you want to get a driver package from Logitech, I'm assuming. The thing is, with this kind of stuff, it's kind of a default standard. You don't necessarily need software drivers.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where the system might be using a driver that's not actually necessary. So it's kind of, if you want to start mucking around, you basically pull the ones that are bad when you're, and then you unplug your USB. I don't know if you need to do restart. You could do restart, come back in and plug it back in, and then the system will set that up again. So that might be the problem. That's going to be my guess. The other option is just, you probably have a sound card in your computer. Don't use the Logitech speakers anymore. Just use normal speakers. But, of course, that's kind of silly since you already have them.
I think the other thing to suggest is when you go to your volume control, double-click on that on the bottom right of your computer screen. And I would mess around with some of the settings there, because I would guess that you're having a hard time with other speakers as well.
Well, what used to happen is that they wouldn't work if they were plugged in and I went to like a Fox and tried to watch a show. But if I turn the computer off and with the USB port, plugged into the speakers, then they would come up. But I couldn't switch. There was no easy way to switch from.
Right.
So
that has to do with sound management on the Windows machine. I think at this point that's the best I can do for you.
Okay.
I'm assuming Logitech has a support forum. Is that true, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to logitech.com/support. Browse down, find your product. There's a whole bunch of forums, frequently asked questions.
And Bob, if you don't get your question answered there and you get frustrated with that in any way, let me go to GeekSpeak forum and just fill it up, you know, communicate with the geeks, and I'll pester Nick to get a coworker to help.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so we're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like today. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. And if you want to send me, if you want to ask a question via Skype, please feel free to do so. My name's Lyle_Troxel. Actually, it's not my name, but that's my username. Let's go ahead and go on a little bit more about the camera quality, because one of the things I got with these cameras that I was, Al, when you said, I got a friend at Logitech and you can come on the show and local, that's great, like people having in the air room. I was like, okay, but, all of us are on Macs, well, except for Miles, and they've got a camera built in.
I have to say, I use webcams all the time, constantly in my work. I live in Ben Lomond. A lot of my clients are over the hill, and I use webcams with them all the time, and not only does it save... it's green because it saves gas.
Sure.
It saves me, 2-3 hours of travel time, and sitting. And so it's useless time. And I have a Mac, the Mac I have at home, I have a tower, there's no webcam.
Right.
I'm not using, when you're using a computer for the kind of work I do, production work, you're typically going to have a tower.
Yeah, you have a better machine.
Which doesn't have, and I also like the idea of taking a webcam, unhooking it from the machine and turning it around and pointing it.
Using
things.
It as a camera. I was going to say is that this was kind of my first, is it really that exciting? And then come in, set up the camera, get on Miles' machine, and it's got macro, right? It's got focus at a different field. And I'm like, oh, this is a really good camera. And what I use my web camera a lot now for is I'll do sketches and drawings with pen, paper, whatever, and then I'll take a quick shot of it with the webcam and then pull it into Illustrator to do a a vector translation of that and then use that as a piece of art online, right?
That's a good idea.
But the camera on the Mac that's built in is kind of bad for that. It's always blurry and I never really get the kind of resolution I want.
Well, it's always there. It's nice
it
to
is always
have a
there.
Cam there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But this quality picture, this image is much better.
Yeah, we were very impressed by the fact that we were getting good focus at 3/4 of an inch.
Yeah. How many centimeters is that?
Well, apparently the published spec is by within 8 centimeters, but this was well within 8 centimeters.
Yeah.
This was, like
and,
I said, less than an inch.
And you put your fob up there and you could see the grains of sand on it. I mean, having a macro lens video and / camera connected to your computer all the time is very cool. So though you brought quite a few of these cameras, we're not going to give all of them away. I'm keeping one. Miles is keeping one.
One of the great things about the QuickCam Vision Pro from Logitech.
Not that this is a commercial for the product, but go on.
Not at all. Just want to make sure that the customers find the right one to give them all these great features. When you have the embedded one, you don't have the autofocus. You don't have this lighting correction system that's going to make sure you look good. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to use your webcam, you want to look good. If you wanted to be dark and you wanted to be grainy, you would take a picture and you'd send it over and you draw some sketches.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, not what you're after.
Right, right. All right, we're going to go ahead and take another call. I just want to let you know that the views expressed on GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. So just to let you know. And, of course, there are a lot of camera products out there, web camera products out there. Take a look at your local store. You'll see a whole bunch of different stuff. Figure out the one that you best use. We're just talking about the Logitech one because you happen to bring them in and they're cool to play with and we give them some feedback. And I think the resolution looks good and that it worked on Linux is a good, pretty good standing point. But in any case, let's go ahead and take another call, shall we? Steve, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I am interested in the content of your show today because I have grandchildren living on the East Coast and I'm thinking about, I think I'll look at getting that set up. But my question is different. I'm a kind of a geek wannabe. I love listening to your show, and I'm happy to be working in a company that has an MIS department, and these guys just do amazing stuff for us. And I want to hear what recommendations you might have for someone who doesn't really want to be a programmer but wants to reach a fairly high sophistication level with typical Microsoft apps. And I guess it would be something going towards a Microsoft certified professional, but I'm not really trying to turn myself into a professional.
You just want to have a higher degree of computer skills.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing you could do, of course, is really get to know your IT department at your company and start going out to lunch with somebody and start pestering them, become good friends, and then, invite them onto your radio show. And oh, wait, that's what I do. So that's one option, of course, is to just find more people in your life that are geeky and chat with them and have them teach you. A lot of geeks, once you get past that barrier of us being a little rough around the edges sometimes, we normally like to teach, I think. I think geeks like to share knowledge. I think it's one of the things that shows off their geekiness. But in any case, that's not the best solution for you. You're in Pacific Grove, right?
Yeah.
Is there a community college close by you? What's the closest community college? Because that's the way to go, in my opinion.
Oh, community college, that would be Monterey Peninsula College.
Okay. So I don't know if Monterey Peninsula College has, you can just do a course at a time if you have to be accepted. I guess, it's a course at a time kind of thing. Cabrillo's got some great classes like this. And you basically just start, what you want to do is kind of don't start the computer-based class, but you want to take that class that kind of gets you a little higher above. And there's probably quite a few of them. And doing that is, I think, a pretty good way to learn basic computer skills. Miles, you were a tutor there for a while in math and stuff, but do you see that there's good solutions for people at community college to learn to be more advanced of a computer user?
Oh, absolutely. There are ones that are on the computer science path, which basically is applied mathematics path, but there are also a lot of classes. The vast majority of the classes are more technical trade-based.
Right.
So learning how to use Photoshop, learning how a computer
works
in general.
What about stuff like setting up your home or network?
They absolutely have networking classes there.
Yeah. And they have network classes not focused on just like the HTTP, the Ethernet stack. They actually have classes about configuring routers and what a firewall is, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the community college, I think there's nothing better than that. I mean, it's of course, a big
especially
time
our community
sink.
College. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Cabrillo's been really great, but I think even Monterey Peninsula is going to have some classes like this. And Steve, if you're interested in advancing, that's a great way to do it. The other thing to do, and you got to keep in mind that pretty much all the geeks in the room, we are self-taught, right? So we just spent time playing. We removed the fear of the computer, which is primary, and then just played. And that's where we are today. And, of course, that's, 60 years in the room right now, but still.
My issue is not so much computer fear because I've always loved it, but I've been more kind of business-oriented, and I spend so much time with it that I don't – and then I guess I admittedly spend a little bit too much time playing Internet chess, too.
But so it's not so much a matter of fear, it's been a more matter of I use it so much during the workday that then I don't often just try to play it just to learn.
Yeah, that's and I think that's another reason to have a good class that you're going to regular. So you're actually making sure that this amount of time I'm going to allocate to getting better and more knowledgeable on the computer. Hey, thanks so much, Steve, for the call.
Thank you.
Bye bye. And let's go to Los Gatos. Michael, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Hi, good. What's your question?
Hey, I am working with a new iPhoto on my Mac, and I'm trying to get a slideshow together. But the slideshows seem to only come out in the order that you install them in. Is there any way to change the order?
Meaning the photos themselves, the order
of the
photos?
Yeah, the way that they play in the slideshow.
The way you do that is you actually manage the slideshow, I believe, in iPhoto.
Right.
And organize it. And you can resort in iPhoto. You just drag the pictures around when you're looking at that playlist. So, or not playlist, album. So in iPhoto, make an album, and then assign all the photos you want in the slideshow to that album. Then take the open the album, and when you're in the actual album view, where on the left-hand side it's the album, you can then drag those photos around to sort them any way you want. Then when you go back into iPhoto and say do slideshows, one of the lists will be photos in general, but down below should be that album. Click on that album and use that album, and then it will be in that order. I think that's how you do it. Now, I've never done this. And that's just my assumption of how
you just
do it. It used to be that way, but I don't think when you're using 8, it lets you do that.
Do you have the new iPhoto as well?
Yeah, everything's the new...
8 or 9? 9 just came out.
The newest one that they just put out.
So 9.
Yeah. Well, if you go to View and sort photos, you can... There's a menu called View, and then you go down to sort photos, and then go to manually.
Yeah, but see, manually doesn't come up highlighted anymore.
You have to be. What you have to do is you have to make a folder and then put all the photos you want to make.
Yeah.
You're making an album. I kind of think of them as playlists, but yeah, it's under albums.
The reason the grade is happening right now is because you haven't defined a separate thing that will store that information of sort order.
Well,
that's the album thing.
Yeah,
so
right
in iPhoto, we're talking about.
I made a special album for my son.
Okay, and throw a couple of pictures in there.
I can throw pictures in.
Okay, and then if you select that album, if you click on that album. Uh-huh. Now go back up to that same menu item. Does it have it on?
Yeah, it still says it. Hold on. It doesn't show manual.
It doesn't.
Date, keyword, title, and
okay.
Rating.
So now that you're viewing those, do you have a thumbnail view right now?
Yeah.
Okay, try to drag one of them to a different location.
In the same window, though, right?
Yeah, in the window that you see all the thumbnails. Just try to move one of the images.
Yeah. Okay, I'm dragging it to the first spot that's there.
Did it stay?
No.
Yeah, you can actually, you have to make sure you don't have a picture selected when you do this, because then if you have a picture selected, it won't give you the option.
So select the album itself. Just click on the album.
The album.
It's so fun to try.
I'm like doing it right now. I'm doing
so,
it.
So Al's computer's working, your computer's not. Al, are you on 09?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the new one.
Okay, it's a mystery. Michael, you've stumped the geeks.
Okay.
Congratulations. If you want to come over to Santa Cruz, we'll give you a Logitech webcam.
Okay.
All right. So what you need to do, Steve, if you want, or Michael, excuse me, if you want that, call the station back in a couple minutes and tell Rick to get your information, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so we've given away 2. That's pretty good. Let's go ahead. Let's go down to, again, Santa Cruz, or this time Santa Cruz. Last time was Los Gatos. And then Pacific Grove. Wow, we're getting all over the place. From Santa Cruz, Jeff, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi. This question, I think, is for Miles, so go ahead.
Yeah, this may be kind of late in the show to bring something like this up, but I've installed Ubuntu 8.1 Intrepid IBEX on my desktop.
8.10.
And yeah. I'm sorry?
8.10.
8.10, that's right.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to set up dual monitors. And I've successfully got, I think, the two drivers I need to run those monitors active, but when I boot up, I get one active screen that shows me my desktop, and the second screen stays black. And when I drag my cursor into that second screen, the arrow turns into a low-resolution X.
Oh, that's a bad driver problem.
It's not a driver problem.
It isn't.
Well,
having your cursor turn into hex...
No, it's an X. It means that the window manager isn't running on that instance, and it also means that you're running a completely separate instance of X, X window.
That's what I was wondering. But I was wondering, what makes that possible? How can
How can you make it share?
Were you doing a whole bunch of command line stuff on like the
xorg.conf?
Yeah. I would recommend that you not have done that.
Do you have a time machine? I went on a lot of forums, and the only reference I had for what happened was to run a lot of command line.
That's one of the drawbacks.
So what, Miles, is the problem? You don't know what state his system's at this point?
Right. At the same time, just on a lark, what type of video card do you have?
I've got onboard video and an external card. The onboard is a VIA.
Are you using both video cards at the same time?
I am, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, one card is on board. It's an S3 chip made by VIA.
So some of the new cards I'm used to, the video cards I'm used to, are like NVIDIA cards, and they actually have two video out on the one card. So once you get that driver going, it's pretty. I mean, Ubuntu for me is just both monitors have worked. I think we've got three more minutes in the show. I think we're gonna have to take this offline. Miles, do you want to keep helping? You want to keep helping, or do you want to just say too bad?
What's the other video card?
What's the other video?
The other one's an NVIDIA. 7600.
7600 has two ports, doesn't it?
It does. It's got a DVI and an analog.
Okay, first off, I would do that. I would use that as both your video sources.
Yeah, if you stay on the line, I'll come and talk to you about this.
All right,
okay, good deal.
Great. Actually, I'm going to hang up, so you're going to have to call back. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
I think we're out of times for taking calls because we only got a couple more minutes. But I just want to say that thanks for coming out here. Where are you, by the way? You live in Santa Cruz?
No, I'm from the East Bay.
Oh, really?
We're based out of Fremont. Yeah, it's a beautiful day. Stop by the beach.
Sounds good. So the Logitech product line, these cameras and everything, you're mostly focused on the video camera side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Logitech has tons of products. Of course, they have USB speakers, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Your role in the company, is it a good place to work?
Oh, I couldn't be happier.
Really?
It's a great atmosphere, innovative products. You know, it's a very immersive experience, and it's always exciting when you enjoy your work, you enjoy the people you work with, and you enjoy the products that you put out, and our customers seem to be happy.
Nick Kuniff is the product manager, product marketing manager at Logitech, focusing on internet video solutions, internet communication solutions. Nick, thanks for being on Geekspeak today.
You.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, if you guys have any questions about any of the solutions, how do you Skype, MSN, any of those video calling things, visit us on the web, logitech.com/quickcam. You can learn about our products, and then we have these informative how-to videos.
We'll put that up on our website in moments.
Thanks.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue, and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For more information, 423-2447. Join Cindy Odom on the Continental Drift today at 1 to 3 p.m. on Central Coast Public Radio KUSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at kusp.org. The Geeks today were Miles Elam, Al Luckow. My name's Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. We'll be back next week, as we are every week, at 10 a.m. on KUSP. Thanks for listening to GeekSpeak.